I just kind of remember thinking, like, is this my new normal? Am I just going to be like this forever? Am I not going to have memories? Am I not going to be able to form new memories? Am I going to have a hard time learning? Can I have this stutter for the rest of my life?
This is TBI, Talking Brain Injury, from Brain Injury Association of Colorado. I'm your host, Phil Lindemann, a four-time recipient of brain injuries I don't even remember, plus a whole bunch I kind of maybe do remember. In this episode, I welcome Stephanie Zavilla. She's the director of sports performance at Winter Park Competition Center in Colorado. She skis, she bikes, she plays hard for a living, but it was a blindsided crash at a winter tubing hill that rewrote her life.
The pressure of being a young professional, you know, I was only 3 years into that position, and already having taken a month off work, I felt this very strong need to get back into it.
Stephanie tells the raw story of how a stubborn dedication to recovery finally brought her back to life, and how that same dedication is now helping her talk to young athletes going through the exact same thing.
I do think it is like the silver lining of all of it is that I can be an advocate for the athletes, for brain health and recovery, based on my own experiences and the experiences I've seen in some athletes since.
A reminder that my guests are here to share what's worked for them. Please consult your personal physician for the treatment that's best for you. Welcome back to TBI, Talking Brain Injury, from Brain Injury Association of Colorado. I'm your host, Phil, and today I am joined over Zoom by Stephanie Zavilla. Stephanie, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And we met each other up here in Summit County, where I'm based at a TBI conference that was hosted in Silverthorne, but you are based also in the mountains over in the Winter Park area year-round, right?
Yep, absolutely.
What do you do there?
I serve as the director of sports performance for the Winter Park Competition Center. So basically, my background is in sports psychology, but I serve more in a managerial role where I oversee the parts of sport that aren't on snow. So strength conditioning, nutrition, sports psychology, and then return to sport post-injury.
And it's a year-round gig, right?
It is, yep.
So you get some time on skis, right? Even though you're an office junkie, you still get to get on a ski.
Absolutely. I make a point of it. It's a great way to connect with the athletes in their training venue and kind of get to work with them hands-on in the moment.
You got to meet the kids where they're at, right?
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Well, and you bring a unique background to this job, not only your professional background, but also your personal background with TBI. Tell me a little bit about what happened to you, your brain injury, and kind of how it sets you up for what you're doing these days.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started working with the Competition Center back in 2013. And a few years in, I decided, you know, I haven't done this snow tubing thing yet that was big in Fraser. And so I had a couple friends come up and they wanted to try it out. And I figured, why not? And my first run on the tube, I decided, you know, I'm not going to wear a helmet. There was no, you know, requirement to. And so I figured it was kind of chill comparatively to other things that I had been doing in the mountains. And so I made that choice. And my first run actually crashed into somebody who was at the bottom of the run and instantly lost consciousness. And when I came to, I just remember being really disoriented and a lot of pain in the back of my head, and basically just told my friends, hey, I hit my head, I got to go home. And I actually drove myself home, which thankfully was only, you know, a mile. But still, you know, not the best decision, but concussion brain for you. And at that point, you know, I contacted a doctor and they said I likely had a concussion and, you know, just monitor it, stay, you know, down low for a couple of weeks and we'll probably be all right. And during that time, I remember, you know, my resting heart rate being super high and a lot of really crazy symptoms that I had never experienced before. This was my first concussion. So I was kind of in the dark. So anyways, about a month after that, just dealing with a lot of memory loss, inability to string sentences together, you know, sleeping 17 hours at a time, a lot of emotional mood swings, things like that. I decided to slowly start to get back to work. And, you know, my work is very dynamic and I'm always working with people. And so, I really got to slow burn this. And at first I was going 2 to 3 hours a day, you know, managing my symptoms. If things gave me a headache or caused, you know, confusion or disorientation, I would take a step back and get some rest, go home. But then we had an unfortunate incident at work, you know, that basically was an emergency that I had to deal with, that touched me both personally and professionally. We had a coach that passed away on Hill, and that person was a good friend of mine. And also was obviously very close to the athletes. And so that sort of catapulted me into having to work not only full-time, but overtime, trying to kind of manage the fallout of that and get the athletes the support that they needed in a pretty tough time. So I went from managing my symptoms to having to go full gas in my job. And from there, I just kept going. And at the time, I felt like, hey, you know what? I'm actually doing okay. This is going to be fine. And I would say over the next couple of years, I just felt like a shell of myself. Like my symptoms were, you know, there. And I just kind of remember thinking like, is this my new normal? Am I just going to be like this forever? Am I not going to have memories? Am I not going to be able to form new memories? Am I going to have a hard time learning? Can I have this stutter for the rest of my life? And a whole bunch of other things that sort of popped up that I really just didn't associate with brain injury to begin with. And that kind of led me to seeking treatment. And yeah, I mean, I really struggled through finding the right path with treatment. But when I finally found, you know, the right solution, it absolutely saved my life. It completely changed everything for me and got me to a place now where I can help others along that path.
Just wild roller coaster of a journey. And I think, man, that's one that so many people share where, you know, the concussion happens. You don't think too much of it, but you take care of yourself and then life happens. It comes out of nowhere and you can't say no. There's so many people that think, hey, I'm ready to get back to work. And then work hits you like a freight train.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
So in your time, you know, working there at the sports club, obviously you were surrounded by people talking about concussion protocols. At the time, were concussion protocols kind of mandatory? Was that something that the athletes were getting, you know, trained up on and you guys were looking after
yeah.
too?
Absolutely. Yeah. Based on the state statutes, you know, we have a pretty strict protocol. And we have since I started there in 2013, basically where the athlete is mandatory removed from snow. And that means in a sled, and they're not always happy about that. But, the intent really is, you know, we're not always sure what's going on with the brain after an impact like that. So recognizing that, you know, vestibular system might be off or your ability to judge distances or focus on the right thing at the right time. And the last thing we want is for an athlete to catch an edge and go down and potentially injure a different part of their body or worse, hit that head again. So we bring them down on the sled and then it's a very intense, I guess I wouldn't say intense, but a very strict process that the athlete must be seen by a qualified doctor, and that doctor has to have written clearance for them to return to the club in any sort of capacity. So that all goes through our office system, and that way the athlete gets the care that they need. And then a really cool thing about our club is that we have a pretty robust return to sport program where, you know, a lot of times with injury, especially brain injury, there's a lot of things that go maybe undetected or maybe aren't associated with brain injury. And some of that might be social isolation, you know, feelings of depression or mood swings, and helping athletes to get the support they need through our sports psychology program. You know, meet with the dietitian. How can I fuel myself for recovery and eat the right things for brain health? You know, engaging in physical therapy. So all of these resources are available to the athletes so that step by step we can walk with them through their rehabilitation process.
And I love that. It is so cool that our youth athletes these days at all levels are getting the same treatment that, I mean, just even, you know, in the past 15 years was really only reserved for professional athletes. It goes real far to show just how much we understand about the seriousness of brain injury and how, you know, even the smallest hit, you know, that one where the kid hits his head and thinks, nah, I'm good. I can ski it out. You're like, no, we have to take care of this the right way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've done a really good job, at least in most recent years, of trying to educate, and that goes hand in hand with, you know, everything that's been going on in the media with professional sports and whatnot. But, you know, really educating not only the athletes, but the parents as well, so that we can kind of all be on the same team, so to speak, in making sure that these athletes can enjoy their sport for years to come and be successful, high functioning human beings in their job or whatever comes next.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but I hope to be snowboarding still until every decade I'm alive, I want to be on snow sliding on it.
Me too. Absolutely, yes.
And those kids are feeling the exact same way. Now, talk about what was going through your brain then, you know, as you were dealing with the fallout from, you know, there's return to sport, but there's not really a return to work protocol. It's one of those things that, yeah, it stresses your brain, but we don't think about it the same way. As you were going back to work and symptoms were just compounding and things were getting worse, you know, what was going through your mind about, you know, your future of, you know, not only like, you know, the stutter and mood swings, but also the fact that maybe you had to stay off skis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So to be quite honest, I didn't stay off skis. And I think that's a huge reason why my symptoms started to compound. You know, post-concussion syndrome became a very real part of my life. And, you know, at the time I didn't know it. But you know, I was young, kind of mixed feelings of I'm fine. Everything's good. Like I can bounce back from this sort of invincibility fallacy, but then also, the pressure of being a young professional. You know, I was only 3 years into that position and already having taken a month off work, I felt this very strong need to get back into it and be there for the athletes, especially as they were entering into, you know, qualifiers and championship season. So I felt like I needed to get back into things. And also, you know, brain injury is not something that you can see with your eyes. It's hard for people to resonate with somebody who has symptoms still when it's not visible, like a cast or a, you know, brace. So I think, you know, not that anybody treated me any differently, but it was probably something I kind of created in my mind that, oh man, like, you know, everything is fine. I'm going to bounce back just fine.
And I completely agree with that feeling of, you know, I'm a young professional. I need to get back after it. So my injury was also snowboard related. My worst head injury was, you know, what, back in 2014, I snowboarding at Beaver Creek, mocking down the last face, not paying attention. I was actually messing around with a camera at the time. And suddenly there was the trees and I ran straight into a tree. Broke an arm, broke a leg, nailed my head. Luckily didn't nail my head on the tree itself, but got that jello whiplash effect. And so I don't remember much of anything for about 2 or 3 days. But what people have told me, one of the things that was on my mind, apparently, that I didn't even realize as I was in the hospital was, I had a freelance assignment that was coming due soon. And somebody told me, they were like, all you could say was like, you got to bring me my computer. You got to bring me my stuff. I have this thing due. And they, the more they told the story, they were like, we just started laughing at you. Like, Phil, stop. You can't even walk right now.
You're not writing.
No, you're definitely not putting together sentences in real life, let alone on paper that somebody's going to pay you for. And it's, you know, just one of those post-injury stories that you hear about yourself that you're like, wow, I would never do that. But apparently I did that. And, you know, it was just, I was just nervous. It was, you know, doing the hustle. I was freelancing to help subsidize my other work. You know, in the mountain towns, it's tough. Lots of people work 2-3 jobs. And I think in the back of my head, whatever my head was thinking at the time, I was also worried about paying rent and that, man, you know, if I don't get this payday, I can't make my bills this week.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it is wild. The little things that go through our heads, you know, the commitment to trying to still be working, to still be, you know, functioning life at 100% when we're truly not 100%. Now that brings me then to your search for the right treatment. Tell me where that led you.
Yeah. So it's funny you say, you know, feeling like we feel like we're 100% when we're absolutely not functioning that way. You know, I made the sacrifice of trying to get back into work and ironically enough made it so that for the next 3 years, I was probably functioning at a 50%. And like I mentioned before, I was kind of like, is this my new normal? Questioning it, getting actually pretty depressed about it. And you know, that was doing a disservice to myself, to the club, to the kids, to everything. And so finally, I started to develop these almost like mini seizures that were, you know, one a minute, every minute for the hour. And, you know, they were non-epileptic, but definitely very disruptive and sort of zapped all my energy. And I started kind of getting really scared and that was the tipping point for me. I was already kind of getting to that point and then those started happening. And I started calling neurologists, and I saw probably three or four neurologists that all sort of, you know, were in the office for maybe 20 minutes with me, heard my story, and kind of said, sounds like you have migraines, moving on. And that felt really frustrating to me. It didn't feel very validating. I knew what I was having, and I knew it wasn't that. And sort of no real treatment plan beyond a medication. And that really bothered me as well. So anyways, I started kind of giving up hope, and sort of accepting that new normal when I came across, a friend in Winter Park who, was connected with this clinic down in Denver, called Resilience Code. And they said that they were, you know, it's the neurosurgeon for the Broncos, and, you know, he's got these really incredible ideas, and he just started this new concussion clinic, and, you know, they're looking for people to kind of go through their programs. And so, you know, I got really excited and went down, and the facility was incredible. I mean, they did a full analysis of absolutely everything that you could possibly associate with head injury. So, you know, they looked at obviously my cognitive capacities, but they looked at my balance, the way my eyes track. And then, you know, kind of surprisingly, they did an assessment of my diet and my lifestyle and things that, again, I would say a traditional look at medicine might overlook. And so we did a full assessment, and they were kind of shocked. They're like, this is how you've been living. We need to do like a full scale reboot of your life and, your brain. So, they asked me to move down from Winter Park, so that I could focus full time on rehab. And, you know, again, young professional, I was like, not possible. So I made that commute 3 times a week, to engage in a ton of therapies, cognitive therapy, neurofeedback, vestibular ocular motor therapy, and then just like an absolute full reset of my diet, put me on a diet that basically was none of the allergens, soy, gluten, dairy, sugar, et cetera. Which again, as you know, a 25-year-old is a pretty difficult thing to do, but I was at that point where I really wanted to change and I wanted to see change. So I was willing to give it a shot, and, you know, I was on probably 30 supplements, just sort of fully immersed myself, fully committed myself to it. And after struggling for 3 years, within 3 months, I came back to life, and it was the most miraculous thing. Absolutely incredible. I still, like, it almost brings me to tears.
When it comes to taking care of yourself, you've got to be fully dedicated, 100% dedicated, you know, like anybody who knows about sport or work or anything else. You know, if you want to succeed, you got to show that dedication. And that meant driving down 3 times a week to go get those therapies. And I mean, your diet, tell me about your diet. What were you limited to?
It was really tough. It was, you know, at first a full elimination diet. It was slowly adding back things like, you know, random foods. And then eventually, they put me on a diet called low FODMAP. And, you know, it's some technical term for, you know, you can only eat certain foods. So literally I would have to like count out my blueberries, no more than 20. Like I was eating a lot of rice and ground turkey and a ton of vegetables. But that's about it. You know, like obviously cut out alcohol 100%. Just very, you know, food became, you know, I had to change my association with it. You know, I love food and it was something that gave me a lot of joy, and I had to kind of switch to like, food is part of my healing. It's part of my medicine. It's part of what's going to make me better. So changing my relationship to that and fully dedicating, it was really difficult. But at the same time, you know, I can't attribute any one piece of my therapies that gave me my life back, but all of them, it may be in conjunction, just completely changed my world.
And that's kind of the trick there at Resilience Code, right? Is that, like you said, instead of a neuroscientist who gives you a quick assessment and says, now you got migraines, no, they're looking at every last facet of your life to see.
Absolutely.
Well, it's kind of process of elimination, right? You can't say it's one thing when you don't know how many other things could be adding to, you know, the fact that you're just not healing.
Exactly. Yeah. Their sort of theory is like no stone left unturned. And, you know, if we can eliminate you know, factors that could be impacting this, let's eliminate them. So it was a really cool experience. And I think another thing that's really cool about their program is that, you know, all of those professionals don't live in isolation. They don't live in silos or operate in silos. So every single week they have a roundtable meeting about every single one of their patients, and every professional chimes in on what they're working on with that patient, and they talk, which I think is a very unique thing in our, you know, Western medicine model.
Yeah, I think so too, because you don't hear of that happening too many places except for, well, you know, those brain facilities that are specific to brain, like Craig Hospital, folks I've talked to who have spent time there. Yeah, the same thing. You've got a cohort. You have a group of people that are all talking about their specialties and how they relate to, well, your personal recovery, you know, like giving you the recovery plan that's best for you.
Absolutely.
Again, thinking of your brain as an athlete. I mean, you know, you wouldn't be training every kid the exact same way. Well, same thing with your brain when it's been busted. You gotta treat it like it's its own special little snowflake.
Yes, exactly.
So we got to talk about cost. Because these treatments, a lot of people that I've talked to on this podcast and elsewhere in the brain injury community, the thing that keeps them from getting better is the price. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being 100% honest, it bankrupted me. I at times couldn't pay for my groceries. I think, you know, I was so obsessed with feeling better in the process that I was willing to do it. But 100%, it is a huge, huge barrier. They gave this program to me at a significant discount because I was in a position to be able to make referrals. You know, I have sent several of our athletes to them since. And so even then it was something that bankrupted me. So it is a very real thing. I think, you know, when people come to me now and ask about, you know, what are my next steps? Like, how can I move forward with treatment? You know, there's a lot of things that you can start doing for yourself. Diet is number one, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to clean up your diet, you know, making things clean, you know, no drinking, no smoking, like all that kind of stuff, eliminating, high inflammatory foods like gluten and sugar, processed sugar, those are things that cost $0 to do. But then, you know, I think that there's ways of kind of getting the right assessments. So I'll always tell people, hey, go see a vestibular ocular motor therapist first and, you know, see what they see. You know, in my case, my brain was working so hard to keep me, my brain hit my left optic nerve and it bruised it for years. And so my eyes weren't tracking and it basically jacked up my whole vestibular system, so much so that when I tried to click into my skis, it almost looked like I was under the influence. So you can imagine how hard my brain was working, trying to help me arc a turn or, you know, just keep me upright when I'm doing athletic things or even just walking around in the world. So, you know, what the vestibular therapist told me is when your brain is working that hard to keep you upright, it's going to rob from other areas of function. So that's why I wasn't remembering friends' names. That's why I couldn't string sentences together in the way that I could think them. So what I always tell people is go get a vestibular, you know, assessment and just go see, you know, if that's a factor that's kind of pulling from other areas in your brain, you can get that treated for a very low cost, just like any other PT. So, you know, I think there's ways of kind of piecemealing your treatment together, finding out which one of those factors could be potentially at play for you, and then just focusing on that therapy and see if that gives you relief. And then, of course, you can then choose to kind of add to that as needed. But instead of going to the whole thing and diving in and making that, you know, tens of thousands of dollars commitment out of pocket, then it's sort of the first step, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Great advice. You know, like, again, you got to advocate for yourself, but those are some good starting places to go that don't include, you know, thinking I now have to go to Craig and I'm looking at the bill and thinking that's not for me. There's right. Yeah, other stepping stones that you can take along the way. So now you're, you know, over a decade away from the incident, and tell me how well day-to-day life has changed for you. Are you still rice and ground turkey?
No, thankfully I am not. But I am very conscious of what I'm eating and drinking. you know, I try and eat as clean as possible. You know, if you can read and understand everything on the label, then that's a pretty good thing. But just trying to eat as fresh and as colorful as I possibly can. And then, you know, of course, still enjoying my life. I think that's really important as well. I would say, you know, things that, are still around, obviously I still have a seizure disorder. I'm on meds for that, for the foreseeable future. But I have them under control. I manage my stress. You know, whether that's through mindful meditation, I'm seeing a therapist, have been for years, you know, breathing exercises, staying physically fit, all of that stuff is so important in just managing, you know, life stress. And life stress is, you know, pretty linked to me having symptoms. And some of those symptoms that kind of come up are, you know, memory once in a while is not, I'm not the sharpest anymore, but I do my best to stay sharp, read, play little brain games and keep myself sharp on that. And then, you know, I think minimizing, I guess, stimuli. So concerts, I love live music. You know, lights and certain sounds and being close to speakers is just a no-go for me. So I wear headphones and I wear sunglasses and a hat, and yeah, I don't care what I look like. It's just kind of one of those things where if I want to enjoy the things that I want to enjoy, I just got to be smart about it. So, you know, there are some boring things, but by and large, I mean, it's night and day how much better I feel. And I, if I hadn't made that choice and dedicated myself to it, I get, you know, kind of scared to think where I would have ended up.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree with that. The outside stimuli thing, this is the same thing. I love live music. I still enjoy going to concerts. I don't go to nearly as many as I used to. But the one that I've been struggling with lately, and I think I've gotten to the point of mourning the loss of, you know, large group activities, oh, yes, parties, barbecues, stuff like that. Things that I used to really enjoy and used to like really find, you know, just energizing by being around large groups of people. Man, I just can't do it for too long anymore. You know, it's like I've got an hour in me, maybe two at the most, and then I got to leave. And the toughest part about that was, you know, friend groups, people wondering what's happened to you, Phil, where are you at? Or why do you keep bailing? Or, you know, what is it that you're, you know, you'd rather go skin up into the mountains for 2 hours by yourself or with one other person than come and hang. And, you know, it's just, I got to tell them the tough truth is that, you know, guys, it's not that I hate you. It's not that I dislike anybody who's here anymore. It's just, I can't handle it. It's gotten tough, and I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of folks with TBI do suffer with isolation and those feelings of, you know, not being able to, you know, enjoy the things that we once did before, because we wish we could.
Right.
But being honest with yourself is a great way to then be honest with other people. And the folks that are still in my life, what I've found is that they don't blame me for any of it. They don't, you know, have any ill will towards me. They understand it. They get it. And they're like, sweet, then we'll have a great 2 hours with you before you got to bail.
Exactly. Or they'll hang out with you in a smaller setting, or quieter setting, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I found that that has also helped me too, because for a long time I had the same symptoms that you were dealing with, was you know, it felt like memory was absolutely, it wasn't my own. I always described it as, you know, a filing cabinet. My brain's a filing cabinet that was alphabetized by somebody who doesn't know the alphabet. It's all in there,
yes.
But I can't pull it up quick. I definitely can't get your name. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, is something I still struggle with a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's, you come up with the little tactics to like, help people, you know, understand it a little bit. Like, you know, somebody's like, oh yeah, remember, I've met you before. And you're like, dude, I know I've nailed my head at least twice since the last time we saw each other. So,
right,
yeah, sorry,
exactly,
bud. And people get it. You laugh it off. You have some humor. And, you know, it really goes a long way. My last big question for you then was your personal experience now with TBI and especially TBI recovery. How has that helped you meet your athletes where they might be after their own injury?
What I think is so cool, because I do compare this to like when I first started in 2013, those 3 years compared to post treatment for myself, I find myself being inclined to like, here's all these resources. And I feel like at sometimes, you know, it can be overwhelming to parents, like, whoa, I think it's just a minor concussion. And it's like, well, yes, but like, I can use myself as a poster child of what happens if you take a minor concussion and push it too hard too fast, aka Nationals is next week. My kid's got to be cleared today. You know, I can speak directly to what could potentially happen if you are to make a choice like that. So I think what has really helped, and what I find myself actually being very grateful for, is that I did go through this. It sounds weird and kind of crazy, but, I do think it is like the silver lining of all of it, is that I can be an advocate for the athletes, for brain health and recovery, based on my own experiences and the experiences I've seen in some athletes since, so that hopefully I can help families make smart choices and give them the support they need, especially in a system that isn't always designed to give, make those pathways super obvious. You know, I think it's super helpful to be like, hey, here are some options. And they're like, huh, my primary care like didn't mention any of this. And I'm like, yeah, because at first they're like, yeah, just take it easy for a couple of weeks and let's just see how this plays out. I do think it's helpful to kind of give them a little bit of background and what's out there. And 9 times out of 10, they're super thankful. And whether or not they end up getting further treatment or whether they need further treatment, I think it's just, you know, information is power. So in that way, I feel really actually grateful for my injury and where it's kind of led me.
Yeah, absolutely. And sport is on the cutting edge of a lot of this stuff. And so I think, you know, even when you've got those parents who are like, well, this might be his only chance to compete in the U12s, you remind them, hey, you know, there's U14s. And 16s, right. And 18s, and then the entire, you know, life's worth of skiing left to go. So, you know, I think a lot of times perspective also goes a long way, and being able to let folks know, hey, I went through it too. I'm sure that they at least appreciate that. They're not going to argue with you about your background, right?
Yeah. And perspective too, in the sense of like, okay, but it's not just skiing. It's like your child's academic career. It's their social, their ability to interact socially. Like, so many things that we've seen, athletes that struggle through their recovery, it reaches into every corner of their life. And so it's, I get it. Skiing is important. I really want them to be able to do this. And at the same time, we're looking at a much bigger thing here. And just making sure we're making the right choices so that this athlete is functional in life as well as skiing.
Amen. And when we're speaking of perspective, you know, putting things in perspective, I mentioned that freelance client that I was so worried I was going to lose if I didn't get that one article off to him. Yeah, I didn't lose the client. They completely understood. Luckily, it was a hospital. It was Vail Health.
Look at that.
So they got it. They were like, we'll find somebody else for this one, but when you're ready to get back to it, give us a shout. We've got assignments for you. And they did. And I worked with them for another couple of years. And so, you know, it just goes to show that some of those things that seem so, so important at the time are not nearly as important as just kicking back, taking a breath, taking care of yourself, and relying on those people who are, you know, your support system to let you know, hey, slow it down. Take it easy. This is what you need.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, my last question for you then, Stephanie, is so summertime, what does a ski coach do come summertime?
Well, you know, a lot of our skiers are mountain bikers as well. So we've got mountain bike teams, both downhill and cross country, and we do a lot of work with them. And then, you know, as we know, a lot of skiers and snowboarders are made in the summer. So physical training, sports psych, all that kind of stuff, super important throughout the summer, especially if they're looking to make it to the next level. So, you know, obviously we're like, enjoy the summer, go do all the things that it has to offer, all the fun activities. And at the same time, we can start our training. We can start lifting. We can start building that cardio base. We can do all kinds of fun stuff. And you're going to show up to next season feeling stronger physically and mentally. So we stay busy.
Right on. And, you know, that's exactly how I felt after my accident back in 2014. I was so nervous. I was never going to get back to where I had been that I went nuts on the PT. I was like, you know, regimented into PT. And I came back the strongest season that I've ever had was that first season after injury. I could not believe it. I was blown away.
It's kind of funny how many athletes say that. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm so much stronger than before, like before I even got hurt. And I mean, I think it can hold true. And I think a lot of people, I'm always shocked how many people post like ACL are like, I'm actually really grateful for it. I learned a lot and I'm really strong. And I'm like, wow, look at that.
Yeah. What do you know? The injury actually improved my life just a little bit. Yeah. And it's, yeah, go figure. You know, not wishing injury on anybody, but hey.
No.
If it happens, do it the right way and you just might surprise yourself a little bit.
Absolutely.
Well, Stephanie, it was great talking to you. Thank you for sharing your experience and some of the tips and tricks that you've learned. And I might be seeing you and the crew out at Trestle because, yeah, you know what? I still do the things that I love. I throw on that full face and go out and lap the bike park. It's just something that I've, man, it's as close as I can get to snowboarding in the summertime.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. I think that's like the big message we always send to athletes is like, look, I'm never going to be like, don't enjoy your life. You know, we live in the mountains. The mountains offer the best things to do, the most amazing hobbies. And yeah, we're always going to do that. We just got to do it safely.
Yeah. Activity is not a drug. Activity is the medicine.
Yep. 100%.
Amen. Hey, Stephanie, appreciate your time. Best of luck as you continue on recovering. And we can't wait to see some of your athletes making their way on up to that next level. Hopefully we see some of their names on, I don't know, an Olympic star list, X Games.
Oh, yeah. Cortina 2026.
That's what I'm talking about. Great talking to you, Stephanie.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's Phil Lindemann here on TBI, talking brain injury, the Brain Injury Podcast.